You're listening to Alive 90.5.
And good evening. Welcome to the Power Up Show with Mia and Paul, rocking you through the week that was in business. Paul, hey, mate, you look exhausted, but what's on the evening show?
Good evening, Mia. Good evening, everybody. And thank you for the kind compliment about my exhausted state.
Paul, as always, you are so handsome and dapper, looking absolutely fantastic. Cover of the GQ magazine is for you.
I always know when you're lying. Anyway, let's get on with it. It's let's call it Power Up Express. Welcome, everybody, to our Thursday evening show. And on the show tonight, Cinepack show tonight, we'll be talking, first of all, to a lady called Kelly Chu. And Kelly will be talking to us about her experience of using LinkedIn. And also talking about 100 lunches with strangers and how that's helped her up her business.
Through LinkedIn, making those connections through LinkedIn. Amazing.
All through LinkedIn, that's right. Exactly right.
Didn't your mother tell you not to have lunch with strangers?
I think which is not accepting sweets off strangers,
that
it said. So, and after that, I'll be talking through about having five effective workplace conversations and how they can help your business. Then we'll be talking to another guest, David McCauley. And David is an expert in sales strategy within the FMCG, the Fast Moving Consumer Goods area, which sounds really insightful. And we're talking about a case study.
David and I have had a conversation off air, and I must just tell you the insights that he's given me on Aldi and the Aldi model, because I'm very familiar with the Woolworths and the Coles and the Metcash models. It's just blown my mind. I've got a whole new level of respect for what Aldi have actually built, so I can't wait to speak to David so you can share some information
sounds
with
good.
All of you.
Absolutely right. And then Mia, you're going to be talking to us about DISC and using DISC. Now, DISC is something we both love. So. And you can give us a little bit of a segment there. And then before the end of the show, we're talking to the fabulous Raj before the Bollywood show
I'm going to introduce Raj to something that you told me just before we went on air. And I believe your words to me were, why do I ever tell you anything?
I do believe I did. That's right. Anyway, meantime, you're listening to the Power Up Show with Mia and Paul on Alive 90.5.
And you're back with the Power Up Show with Mia and Paul. And we currently have Kaylee Chu on the line. And Kaylee Chu, it's a story that I found on LinkedIn, Paul, and I think you're across it too, because when we look at LinkedIn, we tend to make connections, but we don't actually do anything with these connections. But Kaylee took a very unique approach to connecting through LinkedIn, and that was creating an environment where she had lunch with 100 people. Kaylee, how are you?
Hi, Mia. Hi, Paul.
Hello.
Thanks for having me here tonight.
No problem. Kaylee, tell us, what was your thinking around deciding to change the way you used LinkedIn and have 100 lunches or coffee dates, should we say?
They are definitely lunches, more than a coffee date, because we had, you know, big meals together sometimes and have long, long, long lunches.
Really?
Yes. The longest lunch I had was about 3-4 hours long.
My goodness. So tell me, what was your thinking? What made you decide to do this with LinkedIn firstly?
I didn't choose to do it. I kind of got pushed to do something because I was really shy before. I couldn't talk to any strangers or anyone that's non-Asian background. I wasn't born here. I was born in Hong Kong. And English it's not my first language. So I was really shy. And I got pushed to a point where I thought to myself, I had to do something. I had to change. And I want to find someone that I can talk to, like strangers that are willing to talk to me. But instead of go on other platform, I thought LinkedIn is a professional platform where I can look at people's profile and see what they've done, someone interesting to meet. So that's why I chose LinkedIn to get people for lunches.
So what were you hoping to achieve? So you said that you were very introverted, I suppose is the right word. I don't like using that word. You were very uncomfortable.
You sound like you're just like Mia, actually. Mia's very introverted.
Yeah, and your English is beautiful, so I'm not quite sure where that came from. What were you hoping to achieve by doing
honestly, this? Honestly, when I first started, all I wanted to do was just build my confidence because, like I said, I couldn't talk to strangers. Not just strangers, even people that I know for a long time, I still can't talk to them. Anyone that's non-Asian background, I just can't.
It's fascinating, isn't it? I'm just looking here as well again at this, and when I read the story earlier, I wasn't absolutely sure. Look through the pictures as well, and you've got selfies of a lot of these lunches as well, I see.
Yes.
Fantastic. What kind of people did you choose to meet with? How did you select them?
I looked at their profiles. So I purposely look at different diversified people so that I don't hang out with people from Hong Kong only and go and meet more people from like different industry, for example, and different cultural background, different stage of life, different age group, etc. So I want to meet as many people as possible from different backgrounds so that I can learn from them.
And what were the five biggest lessons that you feel you learned from the kind of people you met?
Oh, wow, so many. I've learned a lot from all these lunges. I think the biggest lesson that I learned for myself is that we have the power to change our own destiny. And we can, if there's anything that we're not happy with, like I was shy and I couldn't talk to people, and we have the ability to change and push ourselves out of our comfort zone. And now I'm happy to talk to anyone.
Yeah, it sounds like it, because you're now on the radio on a live 90.5. There's only 12,000 people listening to you currently.
Oh, wow. So.
Plus two who might be listening online.
And those listening online, so you've done well.
Including me as mum.
So much. Yes. And also, like, strangers are not that scary, and definitely not as scary as our parents make us feel.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's interesting, isn't it? And it's funny because, you know, it's one of those things that you kind of think there's lots of conventional ways that people try and actually overcome a shyness, and you've chosen a very unconventional way, but a fantastic idea, though.
You pushed yourself well out of your comfort zone, and then you went 25 kilometres further away from it. So it's just amazing. I know that when I meet people through LinkedIn, and I'm not really that introverted, but I do get a little nervous.
Sorry,
I don't
I'm
know
nodding.
What to expect. Now, Paul and I were just looking. You've actually written a book based
right,
on your experience. Do you want to tell us a little bit about this?
Oh, the book is. I actually accidentally wrote a book. I wasn't planning to write a book at all. That's not my plan. But then after I had all the lunges, because I met majority of them through LinkedIn, so after all the lunges, that was end of last year, I just sit down on my computer and I start typing. I just planning to type a thank you email, my thank you article, to thank you all the guests who had lunch with me and, you know, what lessons that I learned. But the first draft that I got was like 3,500 words because so many lessons. So I thought, okay, I'll do an e-book, and I start typing and typing, and before I know it, it becomes, you know, 30,000 words. So what I did, I combined all the lessons that I learned, 15 lessons through all the lunches into the book. So the book name is 100 Lunches with Strangers. And, you know, some of the FAQs, because lots of people ask me lots of questions. I put the FAQs in there and a template people can use when they, if they want to do something similar. So I put a template there, the message template, so they can use and send message and invite people out for lunches and just a thank you.
I have to ask the question, though. Who paid for the lunches?
Yes, and a way to thank all my lunch guests and also my mentor, John DiNatale, for helping me, you know, encourage me for real.
Like beautiful. Yeah, I've connected with John and I've been going through his profile. I think we're definitely going to have to get him on the show. So he'll be getting
sure
a call from me relatively soon.
He used to work on the
I just wanted to know, who paid for all the lunches, 100 lunches?
That's an interesting question. I always offer to pay for the lunches because I invite them out for lunch. But to be honest, I'd say half of them, I don't have an official record, but roughly half of them people would offer to pay for the lunch.
Oh,
so.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe. Yes.
Fair, sometimes.
Pay. Sometimes other people pay, but for all the lessons that I learned, I don't even care if I have to pay.
Yeah, it sounds
the experience sounds fantastic. Okay, just one final question we'd just like to ask you. How would you suggest people use LinkedIn moving forward as a tool to connect?
Absolutely. Definitely recommend that. I just can't find any other platform that you can meet other industry people in such an efficient way. Like, I've met so many interesting people, like anesthetists and surgeons and
You work quite diverse. Because,
you know,
Katie,
yeah.
What's your background? You're in finance.
Yes, financial planning.
So you were quite diversified in who you were contacting. If you say you were talking to anesthetists and doctors, that's nowhere near finance, really. Well, except for the fact I'm going to sell a kidney if I need to see an anesthetist.
Everybody needs a financial planner, but it's who you most commonly connect with.
That's right. So we can educate each other. So I can educate them about superannuation, tax minimization, and investments, and they can teach me about the industry. Like, graphic designers, he taught me how to, you know, the whole process from a concept into a final production, and I learned from, you know, so many different things that I never ever thought of. Not that I can use it in the real life, I probably never use them, but it's just amazing to learn so many knowledge from different people.
Amazing, yeah. Beautiful. Well, Katie, thank you so much for coming on the show. We do appreciate it. And I've absolutely enjoyed reading your article. Where can I get your book?
In my website, so kayleechu.com or 100lunches.com, or you can just get it from Amazon, Yeah, or Kindle.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Kaylee. We do appreciate you being on the show.
Thank you. Great to talk to you, Kaylee. You're listening to Alive 90.5. This is the Power Up Show with Mia and Paul.
So, Paul, today I was involved in quite an interesting meeting where the conversation started a little bit around how to be better communicators in the workplace, but more importantly, around how to communicate new ideas, new innovations. And it was interesting because I started asking questions around how this particular organization worked. They've got thousands of people in the organization. And I said, well, what happens when you come up with this really good idea? What do you do with it? And the comments I kind of got was a little bit of a chuckle, embarrassed little laughs. And one of the people in the room actually turned around to me and said, yeah, this meeting is where good ideas actually come to die. And I said to them, well, that makes no sense. What do you mean? And they said, well, we do come up with great ideas, great initiatives, but from there it just seems to stagnate and then there's nothing. So my question to you, Paul, is we've had a conversation about how conversations around ideas and innovation in the workplace needs to be. And for the life of me, I could not remember what that cycle looked like. So could you just run us through what that cycle's like?
Yeah. At least it proves sometimes you listen to me. So
I always listen to you as long as you're not testing me.
Yeah, that's right. As long as I'm not talking about sport.
Yeah.
Look, Arthur, from my experience, there are really kind of like five different types of conversation in the workplace that really add up to what I call effective conversations. And one of those types of conversations is very much around, as you say, about that innovation, building ideas, about making sure that ideas are actually they're encouraged, and also from there those ideas go somewhere as well. And
I think this is where the hole is. The ideas are going nowhere. They're just going over lunch and then they're back to work.
Absolutely. Look, I think what I would say with that basically is it's important that when those ideas come up, that first of all there's a bit of a starting point in terms of making sure everybody's prepared to have that type of conversation about building ideas. People stick to intelligent and factual information. You choose basically where the conversation starts around that idea, and then basically you actually work in terms of actually, okay, so what's going to happen next? So there has to be a next point in terms of where it goes from. And that could be about, in some cases, to what I will see the second type of conversation around delegation. So it may be that's actually delegated to somebody to pick it up, to make sure it actually goes further. And making sure those conversations are then, the appropriate work takes place to make sure that...
So it's taking that next step. We've got this idea, who's taking responsibility for it.
Absolutely right. Now, in ideas, sometimes there is risk involved. And sometimes basically it's about thinking about building a bit of resilience with that idea, that just make sure that it's been stress tested and nothing's going to go wrong. So sometimes there's a little bit about thinking types of conversations, what I call about next, in terms of making sure that it's well thought through, which actually is interesting because a conversation I was actually having with a client today was very much on a base of like some great ideas, but oh, hang on a second, this could really...
So the person you're delegating to is you're probably saying, get a think tank together and let's just flesh it out. Let's look at all the negatives, look at all the positives, what can go wrong, but what can go right.
And that might then be coming back. Yes, right, exactly right. And an example I came across today was where a case of some great ideas, but there was a real downside to those ideas as well. And I guess probably that brings you to part four, which is around... having sort of like feedback conversations, so giving that feedback through around that particular idea, this has not worked for this particular reason, and why? Not just in case it's not going to work.
And would you agree that the feedback should be, look, if X, Y, and Z is not going to work, but we would suggest maybe looking at A, B, C.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right.
So the idea is not dead in the water.
Absolutely.
It's just forming a new concept or new idea. It's just growing and becoming a different beast, so
absolutely
to speak.
Right.
Yeah.
An expression I often use is, let's think about actually coming up with solutions, not about just creating problems. I used to say it to team members back in corporate world, and says, please, can you bring me solutions, not problems?
Yeah. I normally say the problems desk is open on today's Wednesday, Thursday. The problems desk is open on a Thursday between 12 and 12:01 midnight. If you miss your slot, we're done.
It's like the conversation with the kids, the same. If you've got a complaint, put it in an email. And then finally, it brings you back to actually come back to the meeting again. So it's actually having another meeting, and this is where it can be the work. They can be the worst offenders, but also they need to be put together to make sure the ideas come up. So once again, you're going back into the meeting, making sure everybody's prepared. And everybody has a clear role to play in terms of that idea generation. And also that there's actually then a way of actually thinking, okay, so where do you go from here? And and making sure everybody's actually set up success and taking that idea somewhere. So that's my five little tips in terms of a little section about having those kind of conversations at the workplace to make sure there's more effective conversation that takes place to hopefully get those ideas through.
Fantastic. I wish I'd remembered that in my meeting today. But now, Paul...
I've got a memory jogger which I can throw over the desk for you so you never forget that ever again.
Paul, we're going to clear off some adverts now. And when we come back, I am going to be nerding out and speaking to another sales strategist, David McCauley. So if you need to go have a cup of coffee or take a break, feel free.
No. Never have enough salespeople around. All good. You're listening to Power Up Show with Mia and Paul on Alive 90.5.
I've got a background in FMCG and I have worked quite extensively within this space. But the thing that has always surprised me is the massive success that Aldi has had specifically with their bargain aisle. Have you seen that one?
Oh, yes. I've spent many a dollar in the bargain aisle.
And according to this article in The Age, you know, and this is according to the article in The Age this week, this has been such a successful strategy for Aldi. On paper, in my opinion, it shouldn't work because it is chaos, it's crazy and what have you. But in practice, it has become a roaring success, making Aussie manufacturers millions. And I wanted to talk to David. He's a sales strategist. He works in this space too. And I want him just to quickly, David, how are you?
Hello, Mia. Hi, Paul. Thanks for having me on your show tonight.
I'm so excited.
Hi, David.
I'm just nerding out here, Paul. You can go now. We don't need you.
No, don't worry. I'm going to chip in. I can't keep me quiet.
David, before we talk about why this bargain aisle has become so successful, can you just share with our listeners what you and I were talking about yesterday? And that is the history of Aldi and why they are so successful today.
Yeah, sure thing, Mia. Thanks for asking. When you reached out the other day talking about Aldi, I was thinking, Aldi, that's a massive topic for, you know, 6 or 7 minutes or thereabouts to sort of crunch it down. So to help you listen to sort of understand Aldi and who they are, what they are, is to take a bit of a step down the history channel. Aldi started off in Germany in roughly 1946, but they can cast their roots back to 1913 in a country town in Essen in Germany. So that's not too much different to Woolies and Coles, actually. So Woolies started in Sydney in 1924, thereabouts, and I think Coles started around about 1914, thereabouts, in Melbourne. So the history of Aldi and Woolies and Coles are not too dissimilar in terms of longevity in the space. So what they do, and if you think about Aldi now, Aldi is roughly worth around about globally somewhere a bit north of $100 billion. So to put that in context,
Jeez.
It's massive.
Small change, right?
That's the same size as essentially the entire Australian food and grocery industry. So I mean, that is just absolutely massive. So the guys, the brothers who started off, there are two of them, they're worth absolute squillions now, as you can imagine. Unfortunately, they're both dead, but their foundations are worth squillions. They split the company in half, essentially, doing it an Aldi North and an Aldi South, and that's not south of the equator or north of the equator, that's South Germany and North Germany. And so they split it apart, but they run the same model, they run the same branding, they run the same back office, they run the same all of that kind of stuff together, which is pretty cool. They just have differing opinions on who should be running the joint. Which I guess that's not too dissimilar to a whole bunch of entrepreneurs that are running around Australia right now.
Or just random brothers and sisters who are trying to kill themselves right now while parents are going, turn off, stop it, leave me alone.
Yes, yeah, certainly my household, that's exactly the way it works.
Oh, Glenn, you're not alone there, David.
So what Aldi's all about is that they just focus absolutely on price. They focus on driving the absolute as much cost out of their business as they possibly can. So that's why they've never introduced plastic bags in Australia. That's one of the reasons, because it's just an unnecessary cost for them. And they have a very, very tight range. So they've got something like 1,500 SKUs or stock keeping units in their business. So comparatively to a Woolies or a Coles carry somewhere around about the 25,000 to 30,000 SKUs, individual products, whereas Aldi, as I said, is 1,500. I mean, that is a massive, massive difference between the two.
And you were saying, you know, for the listeners to understand this, you told me that Aldi turn around their entire store in how many days?
Yes, well, that's the other piece, is that Aldi is amazing. Their success, a retail metric, a key retail metric, is how quickly you can turn the store. So they turn their store roughly, in terms of their core products, not necessarily their special buys, but certainly their core products, roughly every 2 to 3 days. Now,
amazing.
To put that in context, you think about that. A Woolies store or a Coles store turns their entire store something like 26 times to 30 times a year.
And there's a reason we are not on video, because you should see Paul's face right now.
My jaw dropped.
So they run an incredibly good operation. I mean, Aldi are fantastic. The keys to their success here in Australia has actually been, they've been really quite fortunate in some regards. The competitive landscape that they walked into when they arrived here in 2001, there was no deep discounter in Australia. So Aldi is what's called a deep discounter, a hard discounter. That's the terminology in the trade. So when they came in here, Franklin's really pretty much wasn't around. They tried to upskill themselves or up-trade themselves in the Big Fresh model, which didn't really work for them. Jewel had disappeared off the retail landscape, and so there's this massive gap. A whole bunch of consumers in Australia were looking for a deep discount type operation. Franklin's in their heyday. Just to give you a bit of a sense of the kind of market that wasn't being served, Franklin's had somewhere between 25% to 30% of the Sydney market when they were a dominant here. So no one was serving that space. Aldi came in, saw, hey, thanks very much, I'll take that. Mm. So they jumped in and took it. The other piece about it is that because Aldi is not, it's a privately owned company by the brothers, and so those guys can just weather, they can throw $1 billion here, $1 billion there in their speak, and they don't really care because it's what in the end, it's what's financing their lives is what's important to them. And you know, those guys are pretty frugal anyway, and so they were just prepared to invest and take the long-term view that they wanted to put the Aldi model into Australia. Just about every country on the planet that Aldi's entered, they have been defeated, which is quite incredible. So there you go. So they walked into that kind of landscape. So they had it already pre-primed customer base who were crying out for a deep discounter. There was no one there, so Aldi jumped in. The other piece that's been really, really fortunate for Aldi over the last, or certainly since the GFC, is that consumers have been struggling to sort of stay ahead. So consumers have become a little bit more savvy in their approach to purchase. So Euromonitor is international. They've done a fantastic white paper in this space, and what they call it is the middle class retreat. So what that's saying is, in the Western world as we know it, most families and most households are struggling to maintain the same lifestyle that they'd been used to. And I'm sure half of Sydney could appreciate that.
Yeah.
And the sort of understanding is saying, yep, that applies to me. So Aldi, from being fortunate, they've had a marketplace that had a gap in the marketplace which they've been able to fill. And then they've also had a customer base that's saying, hey, listen, I'm wanting all the trappings of what I had yesterday. I don't have quite the same amount of money that I had, and so I'm prepared to spend where I can to achieve that outcome. And so that then leads you to where the special buys kick in, and that's quite an amazing program that they've got there.
David, what we're going to do is we're going to go to a break quickly, because I want to have a discussion with you about the special buys now and what you've just said about the middle class or average Australian just looking elsewhere to maintain a certain lifestyle, which is where Aldi is definitely coming in. So can you just stick around with us? We're just going to go to a quick break, and I think it's quite apt that we've got smooth criminal while there's two salespeople.
Listen, I'm really enjoying your playlist.
Well, we do like rocking in on a Thursday, so we're going to be back.
With Linda Skinner, that's fantastic.
You're listening to the Power Up Show with me and Paul on Live 90.5. And we'll be back after this with David. It's 8 minutes to 7 o'clock. Yours is to Alive 90.5. This is a Power Up Show with Mia and Paul, and we're chatting to David McCauley. And before we broke off there, we were just talking about the specials I love, all the stuff which my brother-in-law would call them emotional purchases.
David, I was saying to you that when I first looked at the Aldi special aisle, and for our listeners, let me just explain it for you, and especially for those listeners who may suffer a little bit from OCD, it's you walk down very organized aisles. aisles, and the next thing you get to the middle of Aldi, and it just seems like there's no rhyme or reason. There is absolute chaos, and I remember my body went into overdrive going, I can't cope, I can't do this, I can't do this, there's too much happening here. Do you want to just talk us through what the special aisle is and why it has been so successful?
The jumble sale of Aldi.
Jumble sale, that's a good way of putting
it. About where you could say it. Yes. Unfortunately, their shelving and their merchandising facilities aren't all that great for trying to sell a ski parker. I will say, having a look at it the other day, or I think in their upcoming catalogue, if they somehow they've got to fit in there a toilet sweep. So that's going to be quite a challenge for those guys. But anyway, so the whole piece around the special buys is they've looked at it from the point of view, that program, in the context of how do they get more customers into their stores to buy more stuff more frequently. Yeah. So that's what it's all about. So what they're trying to do is drive a fear of missing out strategy with consumers, that there are products that is just at unbelievably good price, great quality, that has limited availability. So that's all about trying to drag more customers into their stores all the time and offering them stuff that they may not want, but certainly that's interesting to them. So it's the weekend warrior for the power tools, it's the ski families going down to Threadbare Parish at exactly a good time of year. I think it's about half a metre coming. And so they compare pricing across the market in terms of what's a ski jacket worth, what's it cost to hire, and then go out and range their assortment and price it accordingly. So it's not an accident what they're doing. It's really thought out, it's well planned. The Aldi guys, like most retailers, are all about trying to find ways to differentiate themselves in their consumers' eyes versus their competitors to ensure that they're a destination shop. So, you know, the Aldi guys are doing a great job, the Woolies guys are doing a good job in the way they do things, so does Coles and so does IGA. So they're all trying to bring out differentiation, but certainly for Aldi, they have hit on a concept and a methodology that works. They can not only source from SMEs here or from Australian businesses, but they have this massive global supply chain which they're able to tap into. So when they put a TV on for $500, I mean, they're sourcing it out of the same five factories in China. They're putting it in containers. They're shipping it all around the world, and they're making hay while the sun shines. So it's not an accident. Mm. They research, they understand their customer, they look for items where they can create great value for their consumer and or for the savvy shopper. You're probably best describing the manner.
Yeah.
And providing them with a reason to go in. Once they're in, they buy the milk, the bread, the meat,
and they see the
quality of the freshness of their fresh foods and everything else that they've got in there. So, you know, they're smart operators.
It definitely works, doesn't it, as well? I mean, I guess amount of times it's hooked me in terms of, and even did it the other week as well. And I went through a spell of going in Aldi a lot, and then went there again recently and bought something we really just wasn't going in for.
Yeah, I mean, it's also, you know, Costco do something similar to that, but their model is a little bit different, but of course. But you know, it's all about trying to get consumers in the door to spend bucks, and you know, Aldi have got their formula, and it's a great formula, and it works really, really well for them.
David, so just very quickly, because we're running out of time here, but the model that Aldi have got, can it be repeated? Can it be duplicated, or have they just nurtured that market space?
Oh, they've nurtured it. I think they've got that space. It'd be very difficult for, never say never, of course, but it'd be difficult for an existing retailer in Australia to be able to copy that in any way, shape or form. I mean, what's the point of copying it? I mean, all you can do is try and go cheaper.
You're not going to do that, right?
So, yeah, that's the race to the bottom, so why do you really want to do it?
Yeah.
But, you know, for me, if anybody's going to do it globally coming into Australia, that'll be Lidl. Parent company, Kaufland, is here. They're a very similar operation to Aldi. They're a little bit more upmarket than Aldi, but they're the only ones I can see that could copy it.
Beautiful.
But Aldi don't have any. They don't really have any risk at the moment of Woolies and Coles trying to take their space. I wouldn't have thought.
Yeah, beautiful. Thank you, David, so much for that insight. I'm just fascinated by all of this.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
I've nerded out. I've had my thrill for the week, and next week I think Paul's going to bore me with some HR stuff. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you, David.
It's just not enough.
Yeah, correct. David, thank you so much. You and I will definitely catch up for coffee to continue this conversation. Paul's going over his dead.